A single guy decided life would be more fun if he had a pet. So he went to the pet store and told the owner that he wanted to buy an unusual pet that wouldn't be a lot of trouble. So after some discussion, he finally bought a talking centipede. You know, a 100-legged bug, which came in a little white box to use for his little house. So the guy took the box back home, found a good spot for it, and decided he would start off by taking his new pet to church with him. So he asked the centipede in the box, "Would you like to go to church with me today? We will have a good time." But there was no answer from this new pet. This bothered him a little, but he waited a few minutes and then asked again, "How about going to church with me and receive some blessings?" But again, there was no answer from his new friend and pet. So he waited a few more minutes. Thinking about the situation, the young man decided to invite the centipede one last time. This time he put his face up against the centipede's house and shouted, "Hey, in there, would you like to go to church with me and learn about God?" This time a little voice came out of the box. "I heard you the first time. I'm putting my shoes on." Many pairs of shoes. According to this little joke, this guy went to church for a good time, to receive blessings, and to learn about God. Why do you come to church? What are you looking for? We might come for different reasons on different days. We might come to see people we know or want to know in order to experience a sense of belonging and community and friendship here. We might come because we're looking for like-minded people who have a purpose, a greater purpose in their life. So we come because we know our presence here matters and that we're contributing to something greater than ourselves. Whether we're singing or praying or greeting or working the slides or serving coffee, and not just on Sundays, but we come because we want to contribute to the life of the people here and to the wider community, and to hopefully make the world a better place. We might come to church because we're grateful for our lives, and we feel the need to give God thanks, to offer our gratitude and be with others who are also grateful, and celebrate the joy and the gift of our life that we have been given. Sometimes we might come because we're needing a sense of peace or a direction or healing for our lives. And we want to come to enter into the presence of the sacred and ease our anxiety in the beauty of this space and in the gathering of one another. We might come to church because we have found life challenging, and it is good to come to a place that reflects on the larger questions of life, to find some space and assurance and encouragement and hope for the struggles and the doubts and the questions and the concerns, so that our faith can be renewed and strengthened for the week ahead. Today we are spending a few minutes to reflect on the need to renew our faith in God, our faith in humanity, our faith in the church, our faith in ourselves, because renewing our faith involves all of that. So what is faith? I do not believe that faith is what we have been traditionally told, which is an agreement with a set of doctrines or beliefs promulgated by the church over the last 20 centuries. Our definition of faith comes from the writer of Hebrews this morning, from what has been called the roll call of faith that goes throughout chapter 11 and into chapter 12. And the definition of faith that we are given this morning is this: faith is the assurance of things hoped for, the conviction of things not seen. In other words, faith is about complete trust in something that you hope for but cannot yet see. And then the writer proceeds to give examples of all the people who have come before us who have lived by faith, who have lived their lives trusting in the goodness and in the generosity and in the grace of something that they cannot see. Today in our world, we need people of faith who have hope and trust in something greater than ourselves, because much of our world is apparently in utter chaos and confusion. So many people are living in a state of high anxiety, if not outright fear, because every day we are bombarded with news of disasters and catastrophes. Summer fires are already burning in our country. Every week, another scandal exposed in government or religious institutions. Every day, we hear of violence, not just in wars, but in disgruntled employees shooting up innocent co-workers in their workplace, or hearing news about another beautiful Indigenous girl being the victim of violence. Every day, on our cell phones, over our computer screens, through our TVs, the media feeds us with a steady diet of fear, and we gobble it up. And if that wasn't stressful enough, going through the challenges of our own lives puts us on high alert, searching for a place to live. Every family I know, every person I know has struggles and challenges on their plate, whether it's searching for a place to live, or coping with the loss of a child, or living with a spouse struggling with memory, or a child with special needs, or a person struggling with addiction, or a friend dealing with depression, or someone being diagnosed with disease. All of us in this room and beyond this room have, as my great aunt Daisy would say, our own bag of rocks. We all have our own bag of rocks that we carry that are familiar to us because some of them we've been carrying for a long time. And she said, and we don't want to exchange our bag of rocks for somebody else's bag of rocks because that seems way too hard. But we get used to carrying our bag of rocks. And no one gets through life without some measure of struggle and challenge. And some, it seems, have far more than others. So no wonder our children, our grandchildren, we ourselves are being diagnosed with anxiety and depression and struggles with mental health because we have struggle coping with the challenges of our contemporary society. So what can we do in the crashing waves of all these heartaches and challenges and stresses? Well, the only known antidote to life and fear that I know is faith. The assurance of things hoped for, the conviction of things not seen. Faith is having complete trust in God, in humanity, in the church, in ourselves, even when there is insurmountable evidence to the contrary. Because we look not at what can be seen, but what cannot be seen. And that's the relentless and gracious and generous and goodness in the movement of the Spirit within us, within the other, and all around us. By faith, Abraham set out on a journey, not having a clue where he was going, because he considered the one who called to be trustworthy. By faith, Sarah gave birth to a child when she was old, to become the mother of an entire peoples. By faith, Moses' mother Miriam went against the laws of the government, stood up against oppression and murder, and placed her baby son in a basket and trusted the river to deliver him safely. By faith, when Moses grew up, he left the pleasures of the palace and refused to live in indulgence and royalty, but chose to enter into the life of those who were enslaved and to lead them to freedom because he trusted the one who is invisible. By faith, the walls of Jericho fell and the people were saved. By faith, Rahab the prostitute risked her life in order to save others. By faith, Gideon and Deborah and Samson and Daniel shut the mouths of lions, quenched raging fires, administered judges, justice. Jesus was tortured, mocked, flogged. Paul was chained in prison because they trusted that God did not will their suffering, and that they would be delivered and resurrection would come. All of these died in faith, not seeing what they had been promised, because they trusted in a better country, a heavenly one. Because ultimately, when all the dust of our lives has settled and we close the last chapter on our book of life, all manner of things shall be well again. All is restored, and all who were lost to us are returned to us. And what we lost, whether sight or hearing or walking or our minds or our memories or our joy, is returned. Because the story of our faith, the story of Jesus, is that all of our stories have a happy ending. And if not on this side, on the other side. And that's what keeps us going and not giving up on this life or on this planet or on the people of this world. As Helen Keller said, death is no more than passing from one room into another, but there's a difference for me, you know, because in that other room, I shall be able to see. A little group of us, of 25 people, we've been studying books on life after death, and we're finished now. I'm going to miss that group. Because after 17 weeks, I think we all emerge from that study with a greater, deeper faith in God, in humanity, in one another, and in ourselves, that we do have enough strength and love to make this challenging journey we call our life, that we are indeed guided when we stop to listen. We can trust because we have faith, trust in the assurance of things hoped for, the conviction in things not seen. People in this place, and in every church, in every temple, and in every mosque, and in every protest, have faith. Faith in things hoped for. Now, that does not mean any of us have blind faith. We are not blind to the harsh realities of life in our own lives or in the lives of others. We are not blind to the climate change that is upon us. We are not blind to the greed and selfishness and narcissism in the human heart. We are not blind to the fact that companies are poisoning our food and giving us cancer and allergies and diet and sensitivities. We are not blind to the fact that food is becoming unaffordable. We are not blind to the fact that the gap between the rich and the poor is widening and the middle class are being squeezed out. We are no longer blind to the fact that we have been sending our garbage to other countries to deal with. We are not blind to the fact that there is a pendulum swing to religious and political extremism. We know that there are dangers and disasters all around us, but we are people of faith. And so we do not give in to despair about these things because we have faith that the world is still, in spite of all the odds, in the process of being transformed. That nothing ever stays the same, that we are constantly being renewed, being made new every day, and we who are aware of it need to speak up and speak out and challenge the powerful to care and change systems to the best of our ability through prayer, through emails, by going to town hall meetings, by writing letters, by spreading words of compassion and grace and love to one another. The world has only been changed by people who had faith, who trusted that things could be different and could be better. Because as Jesus said, people with faith can move mountains of garbage. People with a little bit of faith, as tiny as a mustard seed, can grow into a great tree and provide shelter and hospitality to those who need it. A tiny little bit of faith, says Jesus, goes a long, long, long way. Who dreamed that the Berlin Wall would ever come down? Who believed that corrupt governments in the Philippines could topple? Who believed that a teenager with Asperger's from Sweden who cut out of school to protest climate change one day would mobilize a whole generation around the world in a call for government action to take steps to mitigate climate change? Who believed that Canada would ever recognize the sins against our Indigenous peoples and name it for what it was, a genocide? And that it's still going on. We are never too young or too old or too busy in midlife to offer our faith to the world and transform it for the better. At age 5, Mozart composed beautiful music on the piano and violin. At age 12, Anne Frank wrote her diary and in the face of death taught us firsthand about racism and genocide and the tragedy of war. At age 15, Tenzin Gyatso was recognized as the 14th Dalai Lama. At age 27, Isaac Newton wrote Philosophical Nature Principles of Mathematics and changed how we saw the world. At age 34, Martin Luther King wrote his speech, I Have a Dream. At age 42, Rosa Parks refused to give up her seat and moved to the back of the bus. At age 57, Sully Sullenberger successfully landed U.S. Airways flight in the Hudson River, saving all 155 passengers. At age 76, Nelson Mandela emerged from his prison cell after 30 years to become president of South Africa and to end the oppression of apartheid. At age 76, people. All of these people, the young midlifers, the seniors, stepped out in faith, stepped out to care and share and dare because they had the assurance of things hoped for, the conviction of things not seen. What it means to have faith is to trust in the goodness and the generosity and the grace of our God and in one another. Marcus Borg cites a metaphor used by Soren Kierkegaard, the great philosopher and radical Christian of the 19th century, who claimed that faith was like floating in a deep ocean. We know how to do that. We live on the ocean. And Borg says, if we panic and struggle, if we tense up and thrash about in the ocean, we will eventually sink. But if we relax and trust, we will float, no matter how deep the water. And so today, after we have stood together to declare our faith in God and in our church and in our fellow humans and in ourselves by saying the United Church Creed, and after we have sung a song reminding us that we are invited to rise up as a people of faith to make a difference in the world by singing our songs of faith, I will invite you to come forward to renew your faith, to be reminded again that as you swim and struggle and stand up for justice and things that are good and true and right in this sea of life, you can trust the one who is holding you up and will never, ever let you go. May it be so. Amen. Let us rise to say our United Church Creed.